So our commandment for today is Exodus 20, verse 15. You shall not steal. And I'm secretly hoping that at least one person picked up on my joke with the first hymn, steal away. Get it? Okay. So you shall not steal is a commandment that I honestly don't think about very often. Stealing doesn't feel super relevant to the daily life that I find myself living. And as far as commandments go, not stealing feels a little self-evident to me. Like, of course, that's bad. When you look through the commentaries, this is the commandment that receives the least page space of any of the ten. And I think that's because for very many of us, stealing is not a crime we interact with in sort of the classic idea of stealing, taking something from someone else on a daily basis. Like, cat burglary isn't a hobby of mine. And honestly, if someone asks me to list the Ten Commandments, this is guaranteed the one that I'm going to miss on the list, partially because it feels self-evident, it feels a little boring, it feels a bit tied up with not coveting, like they kind of go together in my mind, maybe it's redundant, and also like stealing doesn't feel like as big of a deal as murder or adultery or some of the other big ones. And so I was thinking about this week, wondering what in the world do I want to say about stealing. And I thought about the fact that sometimes I kind of enjoy a good stealing story, right? Like, I love watching Ocean's 11 or Entrapment. The two books that I finished reading this week, both of them involved a plot line of an art heist or an antiquities theft. And I realized I love those kind of stories. There's something really campy and amusing to me about valuable treasures being stolen right out from under the best museum security in the world and how those sneaky crooks get away with it. I don't know, when like Hollywood packages it for my enjoyment, theft is kind of fun. And then I started thinking about other examples where stealing or thievery shows up in our world. I obviously thought about the story Les Miserables, which starts with a theft. That is the beginning of that story. Jean Valjean shows up at the house of this priest, and he steals the silver. And when he's caught, the priest gives him the silver candlesticks and says, "Oh no, you forgot to take these with you. I gave him all of this silver." And the money and the mercy make Jean Valjean who he is going to be for the rest of that absolute doorstopper of a book, right? It sends him off into a better life, which, spoiler alert, he does, in fact, live out a much better life thanks to the mercy of that priest. John and I started talking about the way stealing is used in political rhetoric, and it's used on both sides of the spectrum, right? The far sort of conservative right likes to talk about right now, a big one is, you know, immigrants are stealing American jobs, whether we think that's true or not. But just as much on the progressive left, you'll hear people using language of stealing or looting or theft tossed around when talking about corporations or high net worth individuals moving their money overseas in order to keep themselves from paying their fair share of taxes. That they are somehow thieving from the American public by using shell corporations and the like. I noticed that stealing was part of my daily life a few weeks ago. I stopped in at a gas station and I walked up to go buy a Diet Coke and I started chatting with the clerk, as you do. And I said, "Oh, how are you doing?" And she said, "Well, we're a little shaken up today." And I said, oh, why?" And it turns out they had been held up at gunpoint the night before. And I thought, you were held up at gunpoint, and then you showed up the next day at 9 a.m. to sell me a Diet Coke? Wow, okay, that's not my daily job. And so I sat and talked with them for a little bit longer because I thought, you know, that is a big thing to go through. And I was sort of surprised as I thought about all these different examples of stealing and the way they show up in our world at how very flexible and morally ambiguous my own feelings about stealing turn out to be. I found that, for me, the context of why something is stolen allows me to decide whether or not I think that stealing is a problem. So for Jean Valjean in Les Miserables, his initial act of theft is played out by Victor Hugo in such a way that it is almost as if God has ordained the thievery that Jean Valjean might receive mercy to then become the man that he becomes, saving many other people along the way. Or we love the story of Robin Hood, right? Robin Hood is a thief. He robs the rich to give to the poor, but we like him and we support that because the underlying context is that the wealthy are rich because of the ill-gotten taxation and gain on the backs of the poor. So it's almost as if Robin Hood isn't stealing. He's just setting things back to rights because the wealthy have already been stealing from the poor. But holding up a gas station employee at gunpoint, that is just sort of not at all morally ambiguous to us. That is a reprehensible crime. We might have a bit of understanding if someone tells us why they were holding up the gas station, but quite frankly, when it's violent or someone's life is on the line, we don't have much patience for that. And as I was thinking about this, I thought, if this is such a morally flexible situation, why is it a commandment? Why would God say, don't steal? Is God deeply concerned with property? Like, is God concerned with our stuff and our ownership of stuff? And I don't think that is the case when it comes to this commandment. And if you've been listening at all for the past 7 weeks, you know that the commandments are not about stuff. The commandments are about our relationships, right? How we deal with one another. And these last three commandments we're going to talk about, do not steal, don't lie, and don't covet, these sort of mark the last shift in our thinking in the commandments. So the first four, remember, are mostly about our relationship with God. They are sort of the first tablet. They deal with how we orient ourselves toward the divine. The rest of the commandments are how we interact with our neighbors. And those first three that we talked about, honoring our elders, not murdering, and don't commit adultery, deal with our closest neighbors, our parents, those who have raised us, the members of our own family, and our relationship to ourselves. But these final three commandments shift our eyes again. They sort of draw the circle a little wider. And these commandments are sort of social commandments. They're concerned with how our society functions as a big interconnected group of strangers, one to another. So stealing is an interesting place to start. Stealing is very often a crime that is born out of some kind of fear. And that's why it's a morally ambiguous crime for us. Because if we can see someone's fear as legitimate or understandable, then the crime itself becomes less heinous, so long as no one's hurt along the way. So to put this more directly, right? Like you read a book, someone steals bread to feed their family. We understand that and we forgive them. Someone steals money from their employer in order to pay off an exorbitant medical bill, especially a medical bill for someone else. We might say, yes, you should still be punished for that crime, but we might have sympathy toward the person who stole the money. But if you hold up a gas station, especially for the sheer thrill of it, because you think it's fun to scare other people, that is reprehensible. We have very little space for that. So there's this huge range in how we view stealing. And what matters is that fear. And whether the fear is born of a relationship or a commitment to another person, or whether it's simply something we're doing for fun or because you happen to be greedy. Now, the Ten Commandments, as you will remember, came to the people just after they had escaped slavery in Egypt. So they are literally at the foot of this mountain receiving these rules from God, like literal days after escaping slavery. And when I think about that context, stealing becomes a very interesting thing for God to be concerned about. Because if you are a community of people who has just left slavery, one of your deepest rooted fears is going to be about security. Who are you? What are you going to do? How are you going to survive if you are no longer subjugated by the only system that you and your people have known? And we know that the people felt this way, right? Like God shows up with a manna for them. I love this story. And God says, okay, I'm going to send you manna in the desert, but don't save any of it because I'll send you more tomorrow. You don't need to save any. But the people are so afraid. Their insecurity is so deep that they decide, you know what? Maybe the manna won't show up tomorrow. And so they hoard it. And what happens? The manna like rots and gets maggots. It's a really gross scene in the Bible. You can go look it up later. And God says, I promised you, I would send more tomorrow. You have to trust me. Your insecurity is lying to you. But the threat that the people must have felt must have been really bone deep. And so I think it's interesting that God says to them, don't steal from each other. And I think that this commandment comes in at a time at which there probably was real threat to that community, that distrust could have taken root if people turned their insecurity toward one another. Because in a society where a neighbor could steal from another neighbor, how do you have any hope of creating that foundational trust that people would need as they entered the promised land? And we see this in the way that the law then sort of plays out. We see this idea that God is really pushing the people toward a society that cares for one another rather than a society built on fear. And this comes up through the law. Like, for example, the Hebrew people had this law that God passed down a little later from the commandments where God said, okay, every 7 years, all debt, all enslaved people and indentured servants, all debt is forgiven, all of your slaves need to be set free, and anyone who owns or has sold land, all of that ownership of land reverts back to the original owners. So every 7 years, all of the land would go back to the tribe to whom that land originally belonged. That is like a really radical system. To think about the idea that in a system like that, if you're really living that way, inequality can't take root because every 7 years, you're washing away all the inequality that got built up over those 7 year period. Now, Jesus continues this as well. Jesus tells people stories like, you, go sell all of your possessions and give what you have to the poor. Oh, you wealthy young man, you think that you're right in the eyes of God? Great. Go sell all of your possessions, and don't just sell your possessions, take care of other people, and then maybe you will be right in the eyes of God. And in the early church, they had this same sort of idea. They didn't always live up to it, but the idea was you share what you have in common so that everyone has enough. You root out this fear of scarcity by providing for one another. And theoretically, the early church took this seriously enough that there was once this couple who sold some land and wasn't entirely forthcoming about how much money they had sold the land for. And they come before the church council, and I love this because it's so absurd for me to think about, like someone coming to session and being like, yes, I didn't tie the full 10% to the church. I didn't tell you the truth about my home sale price. And they were struck dead by God right there in front of the council. Like, this is serious business in the early church and among the ancient Hebrews. And I think it comes back to this commandment, don't steal. Create life and root out that insecurity amongst yourselves. Take care of one another. Now, the ancient Hebrews did not ever actually perfectly live this 7 year, you know, we call it jubilee, reversion to the mean. And the early church, as soon as they got any form of power or acknowledgement from the Roman government, man, that idea of taking care of the poor was right out the window for the most part. And the rich young ruler who Jesus says, sell all your stuff, he doesn't go sell all his stuff. He walks away sad because Jesus asked too much from him, right? So these are very idealistic, and it's not that anyone has sort of lived up to these in the past. But these radical ideas about caring for your own community, I think it goes back to this commandment. Because when we flip it inside out, like we have been doing over these weeks, looking at the opposite, you don't just not steal, but the opposite of not stealing is to provide for others generously. Make sure that other people are taken care of, that stealing is not even a second thought because it's not necessary. You've rooted out that fear, that insecurity, the idea that there isn't going to be enough by taking care of one another. Now, this commandment, I think for the most part, is one that we look over because it's just not something a lot of us deal with. But the opposite, like all the commandments, is a lot harder to actually live out. And that's sort of what I want to leave you all to ruminate on today, that this is a commandment that is going to lay the foundation for the next 2 weeks of commandments. This is sort of like the baseline of the Maslow's hierarchy of commandments, if you know Maslow's hierarchy of needs. In a sense, if you're a community where you don't steal, but you take care of one another, that creates that baseline security that then you can begin to look at the language you use to speak about each other, about lying or speaking kindly, or about not coveting. It's very difficult to enforce a commandment of not coveting if someone actually literally just does not have enough food on their table, right? That's not so much envy as an actual human need to be fed and to be sheltered and to have a community around you. So this commandment comes first. Don't steal. sort of a foundational block of the society that God is looking to build. That if you can be a society that works together to root out scarcity, then we can move on to the more noble pursuits of caring for one another with our thoughts and our actions and our words. But like also, if you need this reminder on a Sunday morning, I'm happy to be the one to tell you, God also doesn't think it's great for you to hop in your car, drive to the Portland Art Museum, snatch a lovely piece of artwork, and then go home for the rest of your afternoon. Like, if you do that and get away with it, and, like, take me out to coffee this week and tell me how you did it, because I'm genuinely fascinated by that. But also, God doesn't think that's great, right? So don't steal, and also look for ways of giving and generously supporting the community that all might have enough. Amen.